What up, everybody? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Valvoline, the original motor oil. That's right, original, because Valvoline is America's very first motor oil brand ever. For 150 years, they've been innovating, creating, and reinventing motor oil. From the first high mileage to the first synthetic blend to the first racing oil, they've never stopped pursuing innovation to maximize engine life. Valvoline's latest innovation, extended protection, full synthetic motor oil, provides 50% better wear protection than industry standards and is 10 times stronger against oil breakdown. Valvoline extended protection is specially formulated with dual defense additive technology, which combines an innovative additive boosted with a fortified detergent system. And why do you need this? Because you might not think that you're a severe driver, but short trips, towing, extreme temperatures, turbocharged engines, heavy loads, and spirited drives put extra pressure on your engine. Just ask people like Chris Forsberg, Rob Dom, Freddie Hernandez, Speed Academy, Gears and Gasoline, Dustin Williams, and TJ Hunt, all of whom trust Valvoline in their cars. Valvoline is the only motor oil with a dedicated engine lab where they can run specialized engine testing and standardized testing right in their own facility. Valvoline is also the world's number one supplier of EV battery fluids, offering tailored products to help extend vehicle range and efficiency. Valvoline is the official motor oil of Hendrick Motorsports, and in our upcoming movie, which comes out December 13th, we have running Valvoline oil extended protection in our crap project cars. It is delightful and helps keep those cars running good throughout the entire shoot. Find Valvoline now at your local auto parts store. Ask for extended protection by name. We're also brought to you by Policy Genius. Policy Genius is not an insurance company. They're a broker working to help insurance shoppers understand their options, compare quotes, and buy a policy all in one place. Get your property cold weather ready by making sure you have the right insurance coverage. If there's a winter blizzard or a horrible winter storm, your house could get severely damaged and you need the right insurance at the right price. Policy Genius can help you find home and auto coverage similar to what you have now, but at a lower price. All you have to do is head over to policygenius.com/smokingtire, answer a few questions about yourself and your property. Policy Genius will show you price estimates for policies that fit your search and help you understand your options. The Policy Genius team will then look for ways to save you more money. And if they find a better rate than what you're paying right now, they will switch you over for free. Policy Genius has saved customers an average of $1,250 per year over what they were paying for home and auto insurance. The licensed experts will help you understand your options and apply for a policy. The Policy Genius team works for you, not the insurance companies, so you can trust them to offer unbiased help and advocate for you at every step of the way until you're covered. Policy Genius doesn't add on any extra fees or sell your info to third parties. They have thousands of five-star reviews across Google and Trustpilot, and since 2014, Policy Genius has helped over 30 million people shop for insurance. So head over to policygenius.com/smokingtire today and get your free home and auto insurance quotes to see how much you can save. That's policygenius.com/smokingtire. Today we're also brought to you by Decked. Listen, you've got a pickup truck. You know someone who's got a pickup truck. There are some obvious benefits to having a pickup truck, but there are some obvious concerns. Like, I used to have a Ford Raptor, and basically here's what happened. We'd have all our camera gear in the bed. We would go on a filming road trip, and every time we had to stop somewhere and go in for lunch or go into a hotel or whatever, we would have to then load all of the camera gear into the cab of the truck. Because why? Truck beds aren't secure. I was just thinking about someone being able to just steal that stuff very, very easily. That's why the Decked drawer system is so legit. It's weatherproof, which keeps your stuff safe from rain, ice, and snow. Dekt makes organizing and accessing everything you need so much easier. So basically, it's a thing that sits in the bed of the truck, and there's two full bed-length drawers, each of which can carry up to 200 pounds of whatever you got. It could be tools, it could be filming equipment, it could be ski equipment, it could be whatever. The drawers roll out waist high, which gives you easy access to your tools and your gear. The Dekt drawer system keeps your gear secure. So if your tailgate is locked, you can't open the drawers, you can't remove the system. Even the drawers have additional locks for added security and peace of mind. If I ever got another pickup truck, which I might do for the shop, 100% would I have the Dekt drawer system. That way, I don't need to keep all my valuables in the cab of the truck, rattling all over, ruining the leather, you know, taking up valuable space in the back seat that's like meant for humans. You keep that stuff in the bed, but also secure. Dekt is 100% made in the USA, backed by a lifetime, no-hassle warranty, with a second-to-none customer service team ready to answer all of your questions. This is an excellent product. It really serves an excellent need. If you use your truck for work, if you use your truck for play, if you leave your truck parked in public, this makes so much sense. And if I get another truck, 100% I'm getting Dekt in the truck. So you protect your stuff like I'm going to get your Dekt drawer system at Dekt.com/smokingtire and get free shipping. That's Dekt.com/smokingtire and get free shipping on your Dekt drawer system. Dekt.com/smokingtire. Lastly, we are brought to you today by Noom Mood. Daily life can be stressful, especially right now. Pandemic, you know, work uncertainty, all kinds of stuff. But getting in your own head about it is not really helping. And I should know because I see a therapist. I've had talked on the show many times about my anxiety and my stress and managing that stress. It's something that, I mean, I think all of us probably want, but a lot of us don't know where to even start. Now we've got Noom Mood, which is here to guide you to mental wellness, give you the tools you need to tackle stress so you'll feel empowered to take on whatever life throws at you. With Noom Mood, you'll take the journey to mental wellness one step at a time. Their guided approach teaches you the power of shifting your mindset in just a few minutes a day. With a team of dedicated coaches, you'll have a support system helping you on your journey. I work every week with a therapist, and so I understand that talking about approaching stress, finding new strategies, understanding your differences in moods, what causes them, and how to work your way out of them, it's super, super important. Noom Mood is backed by science. The lessons are based on psychological principles that teach you about your relationship with stress and anxiety. It's a very robust platform, providing you with a variety of tools and techniques to try out and discover. There's a daily curriculum coupled with a one-on-one coach that guides and encourages you on your journey. And at only 10 minutes a day, doing it whenever and wherever through your phone or tablet or portable device, it's accessible and it's convenient. You are stronger than your stress and it doesn't get to control you as long as you equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to steer yourself to happiness. Because one size does not fit all, you can navigate the program at your own pace and you'll have the support of a coach along the way. Noom has helped millions of people through their weight loss program, so you know they can help you tackle stress as well. So worry less and feel happier. Sign up for your trial at Noom, Noom.com/tire. That's Noom, Noom.com/tire. Get your trial today at Noom.com/tire. All right, folks, today it's a crew show. Our pal Thaddeus Brown is in from Dubai, joining us on this one, talking about the Ram TRX, which we've been driving all week, the festivities surrounding my birthday, the car life in Dubai, and more. Thaddeus was a crucial member of the Smoking Tire team until he moved to Dubai 5 years ago. We are trying very hard to get him back, but until then, enjoy his vacation time with us here on a crew show for the Smoking Tire podcast.
I did not know what I was getting into with this stupid Culligan thing.
Home building. This is like home stuff. This is all
I guess. That Culligan unit is not cheap. But I think it was expensive, and it required some kind of a service contract. I don't even know if I own it. I think I leased it.
This is how people get stuck into car things. It's like, oh, while you're in there. well, change this filter
filter.
Yeah. While you're like, next thing you know, like, oh, I didn't know what the rear main seal needed to be replaced.
Well, fucking Donnie Calloway is the king of while you're in there. He's while you're in there, let me send your fuel fuel lines to Jet Propulsion Lab to be like re-palladium coated or whatever.
But they look amazing.
They do look amazing.
Like gold stuff, yeah.
They do look, yeah, the gold. Yeah, I think it's, I think it's palladium.
Titanium nitride. Cerakoted.
I'm pretty sure he said palladium. Isn't that, is that?
I think
I thought
so.
Palladium is like a high value metal.
I think it is.
Is it, maybe was it cancerous? Palladium? I don't know.
Is that right?
Well, no, yours look gold.
Yeah,
it provides
a palladium. Oh, unlike gold.
I think that's right. I think it is. Palladium, silvery white palladium, cheaper and more durable. Yeah, palladium.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool.
That's right.
Good.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Zach. Here we are. This is the show.
20 minutes on water.
20 minutes on water. I mean, listen, this is fucking quality radio right here. We did do some car things. It's been a while since we've had a non-guest show, actually, before SEMA. Like, we haven't had a crew show since pre-SEMA.
Yeah.
So we're like, we're at like 3 weeks now, sans crew show.
Yeah.
So we don't have to talk about SEMA much.
I would like to hear a little bit of about SEMA.
Broncos and Corvettes.
Okay.
Broncos and Corvettes and a whole bunch of people that have give no fucks about mask mandates.
EV swaps. EV swaps. Giant lifted trucks are
the
ridiculous
thing.
And they just keep going like, and going. Eventually they'll be two stories tall.
The squat ones?
No, everyone had a pretty even ride height, but like okay. So many
but the even ride
frames.
Height was the step is 4.5 feet off the ground.
Like
painted TRX. Frames.
A lot of painted frames.
Yeah.
Because you can see the frames because the body lift is wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And what drives me insane about SEMA is, I mean, it's not going to be news to anybody that cars that are at SEMA sometimes like don't actually work. They're just like thrown together for SEMA because they just have to sit there. But there was one car. It's not that I'm bothered by the car being thrown together. I'm bothered by the uncritical media coverage of that car. Like, for example, there was a DeLorean, and I know something about DeLoreans a little bit.
As a previous,
and this DeLorean had a twin turbo LS motor in the back with turbos hanging out the back, and it had bolt on fender flares.
Okay.
And at first glance, looked pretty wild. But the owner was there, and I said, oh, wow, this is interesting. I know a little bit about DeLoreans.
Question. Okay.
Yes?
Did he bolt on the fender flare to his left front fender as well?
Yes, he did. The left front fender is devalued. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So the left front fender DeLorean story is a different thing. But so I go, this is interesting. I go, how much power does this make? And he goes, oh, it's about, you know, 1,000 horsepower. And I go, wow, what have you done to the frame? Because the DeLorean is a Y-frame chassis. Yeah. And I go, this thing will fucking twist this car like a pretzel. He goes, oh, nothing. I go, what? What do you mean nothing? I go, you have 1,000 horsepower and you've put 355 rear tires on this thing because it's a wide body. He goes, ah, oh, well, it doesn't actually run. He goes, I got it. I just got it together to get it here. It doesn't actually run. Okay. Fine. It doesn't run. And the screws holding the fender flares on were like coming out. It was a little on close scrutiny. It wasn't great. Right. Which, again, that's fine. It's a SEMA car. Like, it really just needs to look silly.
An aspirational build.
Exactly.
It's a to-do list.
Exactly.
It's the concept.
Yeah.
But I saw a lot of stories from the car media that were like, this DeLorean is going to blow your fucking, and it's like basically just covering it as if it worked perfectly and performed unbelievably and nothing could ever catch it.
But you have to get the clicks. You have to catch them all.
And I was like, I just don't understand how you could write a story like that without the asterisk of, oh, by the way, this thing has literally never run. And the guy not only has he not done any chassis reinforcement, he doesn't even know what to do. Like, I was like, what are you going to do? And he's like, oh, I don't know, man. he was a nice guy.
But
he wasn't.
The headlines say this will be this will decimate eventually. They need an eventually.
You can will it. Elon Musk has shown us that you can will it into So that was what it was, really the other people's coverage of like fake builds that I was just like, oh, this is so dumb.
It was canceled last year, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So why is it not done? I would assume, like, how much are you paying for the booth? Why you
had an extra year? Oh, I don't know.
Well, I mean, they also had an EV swap truck that looked amazing. Like, okay. This shop does, I think it's called, like, Salvage to Savage or something.
I think that's right,
and
yeah.
And they just do a bunch of stuff. So,
I think
like,
the EV swap truck worked. I think there was a video of them driving it. It at least drove.
At least drove. It had, like, I wanted to know if the handbrake works in it. But, like, that thing looked very cool and could work. But I think they have a bunch of projects. So I don't know if this the DeLorean like fell in their lap 2 months ago and they're like, oh, you know what we should do with this?
Then
like,
why bring it if you know you're not going
to? Well, it's fucking SEMA. It just has to sit there. I don't, and I'm not necessarily criticizing the person who built it. Like, you want to do something silly with a fucking DeLorean? Like, knock yourself out. I'm criticizing the uncritical media coverage of this car that treated it like it already worked.
There's a lot of trash articles and coverage of things out there, and that's like blatantly not true for a lot of stuff.
But that was the one from SEMA. But like, there was a lot. There was some cool shit. I mean, there's a healthy amount of dots and Z's,
nice,
and like 300 ZX's and stuff, and Skylines.
Yeah,
there was that dude had that super lightweight Lexus GS, the Time Attack car.
Yeah,
second
GS,
gen
like 400 thing.
Yeah, second gen Lexus GS with a 2JZ, and it mated to a BMW dual clutch gearbox, which they have a thing for now.
That's pretty awesome.
And like, it was like, you know, carbon fiber panels and cage race car interior. Lexus. He said it weighed like 2,600 pounds. It was pretty crazy. I was about that.
The carbon R32
full carbon Skyline. That that was really neat. I mean, there was some good shit, and some of the Corvette body kits looked all right. Some were terrible, but some looked decent. Very little Porsche, not much Porsche at all.
Yeah, there was like that one clean gray 911 that was sponsored by CSM or something.
CSF Radiators.
Yes.
CSF Radiators. Really they built a cool really 911, good. But
the Boxster's coming back. Old school.
The Boxster's coming back.
Yeah, I think so.
You think like 97 Boxsters are about to be in again?
They're super cheap, and you can put your wide bodies and all this.
There's a reason they're super cheap, because they're very easy to total, and they're very slow. Like, you could total one of those like pretty easily. Like,
and like in terms of fender damage, what do you mean?
No, like if you blow like a gearbox, like they're totaled. Like pretty much, and they're really like the first gen Boxster was like not even 200 horsepower.
But didn't you drive? You drove them all recently, right?
You
did like a lineup of things.
I did, but they didn't let us drive the old one. Had that on display with the 25th anniversary. What was it again?
You didn't drive the old one?
No, it was just sitting there on a
on
a pedestal.
Oh, well, interesting.
Because I drove the 718 like GTS, GT4, and 25th anniversary, and the lower spec.
Oh.
So that it was. Here's a spread of what we sell now.
Oh.
Next, and then parked over there is what we used to sell and where it began.
What is the video of that going to look like? Is there a video?
It's gonna be like 3 minutes of each car.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just gonna be like here are the differences I noticed between them, price differences, that kind of thing.
Was there something that stood out about those?
I think the 25th anniversary really is the best bang for the buck. It really is, because if it's for the same money, you can get the GT4.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'd rather have the 25th. It rides a little better. It's a little softer, and it looks way nicer inside. It just looks like a more expensive car, even though it's the same price. And it's plenty quick.
Yeah.
You know, it has a good engine, has all that shit. It's a really good
25th
one.
25th anniversary Boxster is pretty cool.
It is.
It's like, very cool.
I'm not usually
It's got cool
to, like,
wheels on it.
Editions,
okay. It's got nice, expensive interior trim, through all the red.
The interior looks really expensive.
Yeah.
All the other cars had black interior. I think the 25th highlights, try to get an interior color besides black.
Yeah.
It makes a car look much more expensive.
The ones with tan interiors look good,
totally.
Too.
Totally. Yeah.
You can't go
any
wrong
of those
with
things.
Tan.
Yeah. All right.
Well-conditioned
so
tan.
And, you know, SEMA was all, it was Broncos everywhere.
Makes sense.
So many fucking Broncos.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Which,
that's really cool.
They look good. They look amazing. They mod well in every direction. Like, just, I don't know.
Yeah, they know their audience. Like,
yeah,
it makes sense.
Good.
Like,
they look good out of the box.
Here's our Ford Bronco catalog and put all of the things on it.
Yeah.
And Hoonigan Burnyard, that's really a thing now.
That's great, because that's like, where cars do shit.
Yeah.
Very true.
All those cars run.
No, we were talking about
temporarily, at least.
When we
until they explode.
Yeah, Forsberg blew up his demo car like through a rod, and then they were like, so they literally like swept aluminum, you know, piston rod parts off the thing, and they're like, next car. It was great.
Well, that's like when we saw it. You said 2009.
Yeah.
When we were there, and we were just randomly filming, and it was the most fun. I remember sitting there, we had beers.
There was like no safety there.
No safety, 1K rail. The world was not ready.
They only have 1K rail, but there's like, the people have to stand a little further back. Yeah, not like VIP section.
Leaning over and like somebody's wing could just take everybody's face off.
Could have done that for
Scott
sure.
Ho last night at dinner was talking about how he's like getting really good at doing efficient mechanics leans because people come to their burn yard here in LA and like break their shit and then just abandon it and then just leave it there. And then fly back to wherever the fuck they came from. They're like, no, I'll be back eventually. And then they just like don't.
Holy shit.
So he's like mechanics leans all these fucking cars so he can get rid of them because they just pile up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We had a long discussion last night about mechanics leans because obviously started with that awful smart car downstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, oh, you should just mechanics lean it. And I was like, oh, I can't because storage is different. And he was like, it should have an accident in the garage and then have to go to a repair shop and then you can mechanics lean it. I was like, oh, that's actually very smart.
Wow. Holy crap.
Yeah. He went to Europe and bought two Audis.
I know.
And they're like kind of the same, like an S2 and an RS2. And he was like, yeah, I didn't mean to do that, but like I did. I was like,
he has a lot of Audis. I think he has nine or some crazy number.
Yeah. And then
his car at SEMA looks sick, by the way.
Have you seen his Audi coupe?
Is that blue thing?
It's like blue gray.
Yeah. I think it's
pretty fucking wild.
Yeah, with the
apparently it does not have a wiring harness yet.
But it's getting there.
That thing.
Oh yeah, that looks fun.
Is it? I guess it is blue, isn't it? Is that blue
or
gray?
It's like a tealish.
It's like
blue teal.
It's kind of greeny.
Yeah, it's blue green. Green blue green. I mean, you can see that there's different color post on each of these center cards. And different, but it looks sick.
It's like a blue gray. Yeah, it's like that body kit is pretty fucking badass.
Very
actually.
Wild. Great lights. I mean, all of it. Like it's just proportional in every way.
Yeah, well, like all the seat is like where the back seat used
like
to be.
Take in the other day where it's just B pillar in your shoulder.
That was nice. We can't talk about Taycan because it's embargoed. Except that for the one thing is
am I embargoed? I didn't sign an NDA.
Yeah, right. The armrest and the door, because the Taycan has small doors, and but you can move the seat back really far. So there's a cutout in the B pillar so that your elbow can go in the B pillar.
Nice.
The armrest continues into the B pillar.
Whoa.
It doesn't just stop.
That's cool.
Which is very thoughtful design.
It's a tall people thing.
It's very tall friendly.
Wow, that's really sweet.
Equal rights for tall people.
Yeah.
I need a spot for my elbow, too.
Yeah.
Unlike the airplane.
Why is that computer's fan going batshit right now? The fan is ripping. Are we doing something intensive on that computer?
Google Chrome does that to my laptop.
Really?
Yeah. It's like Google Chrome is known to have a thing that runs in the background that like rips along.
Really?
Yeah. I tried to turn Chrome it off. After
there's like,
that.
Oh. There's like a weird that? Thing. This I can't figure out how to get rid of
this
it.
This is Safari, but the computer's
that old. That laptop is from 2016, maybe 15, but it's
they work.
It has a very simple job to do. It just all it has to do is run that, and so it's like that's a don't fix it until it breaks kind
of
thing.
Yeah, that's how I feel about my cell phone and a lot of things. Like,
yeah,
I don't need the newest 50 megapixel giggle.
No,
like I'm not. Who's taking
50 giggle? Mega giggle?
Who's taking pictures of the moon that often for this to be a selling point?
I'm sure there's somebody, but I don't give a shit.
Like,
I'm so glad they brought back the small phone. That's my jam. I'm small phone for life.
It's marketing. It's like who's drag racing their Demon or their Hellcat wide body. Very few people, but you want to buy it.
Hey, look, Zach. Here's the moon, but closer.
Like, how many TRXs are going off road?
Yeah, exactly. Raptors,
some people got very triggered by my TRX post, which is really funny because it's the people like, I speak my mind in what I consider to be a pretty calm and collected way. And people who would call me some like snowflake liberal or whatever, they're the ones who actually get triggered by it. It's pretty funny.
Freedom of speech, man.
The problem with the TRX is, and some folks wanted to what happened there?
Doesn't show comments on the browser.
Oh, weird. Yeah. Some folks were saying that how is this wasteful and supercars or luxury cars or vintage cars are not wasteful.
Right.
And here's my explanation for that. If the TRX is wasteful in every single possible metric, whereas a vintage car might get poor fuel economy, but there's a cultural reason to keep it around, and you're not driving it every day. There's a historical artifact, right?
1940 Rolls Royce, whatever.
Whether it's a whether it's a Ferrari from the 80s, which, by the way, my 80s Ferrari will get 23 miles per gallon, but that,
but isn't that really? That's valuing that culture versus truck culture.
Well, it's not. It's not a brand new.
That I,
it's not.
I agree with
you're
that.
Not. They're not selling that in today's world.
Right.
They, you know, I'm not saying you should crush all the old sports cars. Is what I'm saying.
And they made. They had poor fuel economy back then because they didn't really know how to make it that much better. Now we have tech to make it.
We have the knowledge. Right. We could value. And I'm not just talking about fuel economy. I mean, or a new supercar, for instance, is that gratuitous excess as well? Well, it could be. But if you drive a McLaren 720S or a Ferrari 488 in a reasonable manner, it will return reasonable fuel economy. I mean, my experience was a McLaren 720S will get over 20 miles per gallon in highway driving you know what I mean?
It's
at 800 horsepower, right? A luxury car, yes, it could be wasteful in terms of using six cows, you know, like that. And that is, there's a valid criticism to that. But the TRX is so wasteful because you cannot be efficient with it. It's so big and so heavy and everything else needs to be bigger. And when you park it, you are actually making the people's lives more difficult who park on either side of you. Like, it's not like your tires are touching the lines. Like, you're literally taking up more physical space and using more physical resources than basically any other vehicle on the road. And so that's, to me, what is, like, culturally offensive about it.
I get that. I mean, big trucks are really hard to drive and park and et cetera. Yeah.
Like, a supercar might be gratuitous in terms of, like, how fast it can go. And there's an argument to that if you want to say that we should stop making cars this fast. But those cars, when driven reasonably, are actually a very efficient use of fuel.
Yeah.
Like luxury cars, maybe we should focus on sustainable interior materials, and some people are doing that.
Right, Volvo.
Yeah, Volvo Star, is
bamboo and whatever.
And there's an argument for that too, synthetics and
like
whatnot.
Cloth is a really luxury.
It can be.
Yeah, when it's like done nicely.
It can be. Yeah, yeah.
Like, where do we get on this leather train?
I prefer a good cloth seat over a good leather seat any day.
Yeah, me too.
Any day of the week.
Me too.
It's breathable. It's light.
But like with the TRX, it's like. And we were just in Austin, Texas, okay? If you were driving this fucking thing in Austin, Texas, it wouldn't be any more convenient than driving it in Los Angeles. Like, it's not like LA is, like, that dense. It's not like it's Manhattan.
Yeah.
Like, physically pulling it into parking spaces, like...
I could not get that truck into parking spaces or into the mall in Dubai.
You have to actually back it in because the turning radius is so bad. You always have to back it into the spaces, and you're physically taking up so much space on the road, in a parking lot, in a garage, and like, all right, fine. If you got a ranch, like
I live in,
if you have a ranch, maybe that doesn't matter on your house, but when you drive it into town, you're actually affecting the other people around you because you're taking up so much space. So like. It's impressive that someone built a truck that you could fucking jump off of shit. Yeah. And like, I can see why there's an appeal to the sound of that engine instead of the sound of Ford's EcoBoost V6, which doesn't sound that great. But like, so big, so heavy, so wasteful. And like...
It's the state fair food of like exceptionalism.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Raptor...
It's the KFC double down.
You know, nobody needs it. And the Raptor, to a degree, like... If you use it for off-roading, great. But if you don't, like, you don't need it. But this is just the nth degree of that.
Look, I had a Raptor, and I thought that was what I wanted. And it turns out it was way overkill. I didn't need it. I barely used any of the things that it did. And I had to sell it because it wouldn't even fit in my fucking garage. And that was a 2011. That was a 10. This truck is substantially bigger than that in every dimension. Yeah. Not to mention, my Raptor was a short cab. When you go to the full quad cab, even on the Raptor, the turning radius becomes fucking horrible.
It's huge.
Horrible. It's a really big difference. And so, like, all right, if you really like big, you know, obscene, like wasteful vehicles, I suppose, like as an American, that's your right. But as a manufacturer of vehicles in 2021, I feel like there should be a little more responsibility to these things.
Well, I think we were correct assuming that Dodge is in their last hour of their party, because then they announced yesterday that they're going to cancel the Charger and Challenger as far as internal combustion engines go.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, and move to EV. And Tim Kaniskis, he was like, look, I know that there are...
Was that yesterday?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't see that.
That's what you were going to say.
Is it a play of, look at this crazy pickup truck, and to get all these people in there that would buy other brands and go, oh, the Dodge Ram regular 1500 is actually nice.
Well, the Ram is a very nice truck. Yeah, like I've driven all the Chevy, the Ford, and the Ram, and the interior of the Ram and the technology and the screen and all the seats, like it is very comfortable. I just like, and it's, I guess it's not fine to me, but I suppose you have the right to be socially unconscious and selfish and say, fuck the globe, fuck the environment, fuck the people who have to park next to me. Like, if you want to be that person, you can buy this and you can be that person. My point is, if you have any sort of social consciousness at all, this is a terrible thing. I would like to see... I don't know. It exists. It is what it is. It exists. A $95,000, 700 horsepower pickup truck.
They sell a fuckload of them too.
Yeah, they do. They sell a bunch of them. Yeah. They sell a bunch of them. The one person I know who bought one, my friend Tim.
Okay.
Not Tim W. No. A different Tim, who has a house in Tahoe, sold it after 2 months.
Whoa.
And went to a Raptor. And he said the drive between here and Tahoe, he literally doubled his fuel economy, going from a TRX to a Raptor.
Wow.
All other things being equal.
And the Raptor gets like 15 miles per gallon advertised.
On the highway, yeah, the Raptor. Yeah. I mean, I drove the TRX for a week, and my cumulative was 8.7. I wasn't hammering down. Like, I was just cruising it around. Yeah. I did maybe 100, 150 highway miles, and the other half of it around LA. And like eight? Eight? Come on. Like,
wow.
Eight is so bad.
Yeah, it is.
You know what I mean? Like, even a Hellcat, like Charger driven gingerly, will get in the teens. You know what I mean?
Just,
like,
you know, think about how much a 37 inch tire weighs, and then, and like all of it's just crazy.
Yeah,
it accumulates, right? Yeah, you need to have this suspension to handle a jump, and so that has to weigh more, and now you need bigger tires and wheels and brakes and all that stuff. And because it's so tall, and I experience this with G-Wagons also, because it's so tall, you have the impression that everyone else is driving really slow. Because because of trigonometry, right? Yeah. Your angle is different, and it feels, you're going 70, and everyone on the whole highway is moving 70. Now, in LA, if the highway is moving 70, that's a gift.
Yeah, that's
happy, a gift. You don't fucking swerve. You just appreciate that you're doing 70 and not 20. But at 70, it's the exact opposite of an EV. You think everyone else is going slow, so you're trying to make moves to get through them, and you become what everyone else automatically assumes that you are because you're in this truck, and you drive like a loud, obnoxious asshole.
And I think you have so much power, you can do obnoxious asshole moves that you weren't able to do.
But you don't have the brakes.
Well, there. But you go, oh, I can pass this guy, and then you can make the move.
And you become that person.
Yeah, because you have the power.
Yeah.
But if it's a regular 1500, whatever they're called now, you're like, oh, I'm stuck here.
Yeah.
I'm okay with my station and traffic.
Yeah. And I respect the off-road capability of this thing. I'm sorry I didn't get to do it. All these people surprised me for my birthday party. I meant to go spend a whole day in the fucking desert with this thing. And then everyone I know who no longer lives in Los Angeles showed up. And I decided that rather than go to the desert by myself, I would spend time with my friends who took the time to come see me. So that's why there isn't a video. That's why I didn't go to the desert. And I made my life a priority instead of filming this one time. Usually I would abandon my friends to go film. That's the standard would be abandoning my friends to go film. But I didn't this time. And so I wrote about it on Instagram. We're talking about it here.
They'll give you another one. You need to like.
I don't think they will after what I've said about it.
Johnny has one.
They'll make another one.
Oh, that's true. Johnny has one. Johnny has a long termer.
So you can go.
Johnny's got one for a year, and I was like, I'm sorry. He's like, he rolled his eyes. He's like, I know.
His fuel costs will be insane.
Where was you did the Reno to something?
Vegas like, to Reno off-road race. Yeah,
you just got to find yourself out there with Johnny's truck.
I should borrow Johnny's long termer and go
drive
to
Pahrump or something.
I'm sure it's fun.
I bet it's awesome.
I am sure it's even that fucking Jeep, the Wrangler V8 we had, is
off-roading is fun.
Is almost as antisocial as the TRX, except that it has a regular footprint and you can it was fun on the dirt.
It was a good time on the dirt. Yeah,
It's silly. It probably shouldn't exist, but it was fun on the dirt.
But the thing that sticks with me with the TRX the most is how wide it is, and like compared to
H1 Hummer. It's wider
than
an H1 Hummer. Yeah, and I owned an H1 Hummer, and I hated it.
And you have like another 6 inches of wiggle room for a standard lane size in America or something.
It's not only wider than an H1 Hummer. It's like 18 inches longer too. The H1 Hummer is obnoxiously wide, but it actually is easier to park than you would think because it's really short for its length, and the wheels are pushed all the way out to the corners.
Right.
So
like a new M3.
It's clunky because it's like a school bus, but parallel parking it is shockingly easy. Parking the fucking TRX is ridiculous.
I would rather have an H1 Hummer than a TRX.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
If I had to choose, if I really was at gunpoint,
You have to pick the most obnoxious car. Do you take the TRX or the Hummer?
The TRX is more comfortable.
The TRX is more comfortable. Yeah, Hummers are really, really uncomfortable.
I know. I drove one from San Francisco back to here with a 10-gallon tank every hour I was stopping.
Why did it have a 10-gallon tank?
Because they took it out because it's only really used for like film shoots, and they trailer it. Other times.
So it was just heavy? Because the Hummer has a 42-gallon fuel tank.
Yeah, so because they had to take one out to put something else in, and it had like that big old tray off the back of it. It was the worst. The heater didn't work. We were coming back from like Tahoe area. I had to keep all my snow shit on. God.
The only good Hummer was the Drift Hummer. The Drift Hummer was excellent.
Those seem really awesome, by the way.
The Drift Hummer was very fucking cool.
It seemed like
the
proper
Hummer's mid-engine.
Yeah, technically.
And not even, it is. It's mid-engine. The whole engine's behind the front axle. Yeah. And so if you lower it, take out all the weight, they got it down to 5,000 pounds, they put in 1,000 horsepower Duramax, an Allison 6-speed with paddle shifting,
and
a rear-wheel drive only transfer case. Actually, no, it was rear-wheel drive. It was selectable on the button.
Nice.
It would fucking drift, and that was cool.
That's fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, if people are... I hope if people are fucking very, very triggered by what I have to say about the TRX, I'm sorry, so be it.
If they can't take a joke.
It wasn't just me. I had a bunch of friends in town. We ran all over the place in this fucking truck, and everybody was like, are you kidding me? This is the stupidest fucking thing. And these are car people.
It's like a cartoon. It's like you watch, you know, remember the cartoons like Transformers back in the day with Bigfoot and all the monster trucks? You're like, awesome! It's like, well, now you can buy that. Yeah. I feel like that's where we are. And maybe cars have gone further than they've ever gone before in terms of catering to our whims and our wants. And like, that's what this is. This is deep fried turkey, like wrapped in bacon in a donut. And it's, I don't know, it's just, it's so everything.
Yeah.
I think it's peak everything.
It's minimal efficiency in every possible metric. It is the most wasteful thing that you can buy in 2021 because it's wasteful by all metrics, not just one. It's not like it just gets bad fuel economy or it just takes up a lot of space. Like it's just expensive.
What
like
what else would it hit that category in the past 10, 20 years? Like what's
this,
the older
that wasteful?
Version? Yeah, the older version of something like this.
I mean, Hummers. Well, I mean,
that's the closest one. I would.
Yeah, think. I mean, Hummers are. I mean, I suppose that like, I mean, I suppose like 6.2-liter Raptors could have been that at a certain point.
I mean, yeah. When that came out, it was inconvenient to drive around in some places.
Yeah.
And granted, I know we live in a city, but if you're using these vehicles in any city, all cities have 90-degree turns. They have lanes that are the same size. Like
these are standardized.
I think that's the thing is. Is the vehicle inconveniencing the driver as well? I mean, that's something we get annoyed about if a really low sports car doesn't have nose lift. Like, this is annoying. Like, this is harder for me to operate than another vehicle, and now it's impacting, you know, my life as the driver. Not to mention, as you said, the difference is that sports car doesn't really inconvenience other people, right, except when it slows down a lot to get into a driveway.
Right.
So this is the TRX is like hard to drive around, hard to park, hard to fit in your garage.
Hard to get into.
Hard to get into, and then also annoying for other people around
you. The tiny little running boards,
it's actually
fucking annoying to get into because it has like a non-running board. Like, it has a step. It's kind of like a rock slider.
Yeah.
It's about 2.5 inches. And it's right up tall. See that? You can actually see it in the picture a little bit. It's like a non-step. Like, it doesn't get lower.
It's nice for the lines of the vehicle to have it like the step tucked up there, it's tough to get. I'm 6'3".
Gotcha. You got to like side foot it a little bit. Yeah. It's actually very tricky to get into.
Because they wanted to keep that ground clearance, I guess.
Yeah. So, like, the Raptor had, like, regular running boards.
Right. You could get in and out of the Raptor easily in one step. This is like, oh, Jesus, got to hike up my jeans and kind of to get in there and use a grab handle.
It's really just about the fact that it actually inconveniences the other people on the road around it, not just you. You have to be okay with that. You have to be okay with the fact that my choice is making these two cars' lives more difficult.
It's like driving a dually, but you don't have anything to tow.
Right.
And I don't think people do that. Like, you know, but you see a dually. When I was a valet and one of those showed up, I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
Fuckity fuck. Do we
Who
have one and a half?
Dually.
Colorado, every now and then. But it was like, do we have 1.5 spots to park this in because it will not fit in a normal parking spot?
Yeah.
And like, that's the life you're living with this truck now.
When we had dualies at the rental company to tow the 48-foot trailers, we would literally just leave them attached to the trailers because they were worthless as cars.
Yeah.
They were so inconvenient as cars. We had two dualies, and then we had a short bed 2500 narrow body, which...
Was that the one with the tune?
That was the white Chevy.
That was fun.
That thing was fun.
That thing was silly.
With nothing behind it.
Yeah, it was fucking sketchy, right? But the narrow, you couldn't drive them anywhere. They were just too fucking big and stupid. Yeah. So it's the same thing, but... I don't know. I mean, I guess like yeehaw, last hurrah, let's fucking. But the idea, that's the problem with last hurrah. It's like we know that the environment is fucked and we need to do something about it now. Why are we having last hurrahs? Like, why are we it's not like manual transmission last. It's like, why are we having inefficiency last hurrahs? Like, that is an antisocial thing to be doing.
And it's
I mean, I think,
you know what I mean?
I know that people are going to push back and they're like, you know, the number of TRXs on the road isn't going to change, you know, all the things that like all the pollution, like shipping
cargo ships,
and
all, bro,
which are like, and that is technically and mathematically true.
True.
But I think the danger we have is if we go, well, if they can do it, I can do it, then everybody just keeps doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, I'm with you. The math of commercial shipping and aviation and all that stuff, it does outweigh our personal vehicle choices. And yet, given what we know about the world,
yeah, I agree with you.
Having inefficiency last hurrahs seems awfully antisocial, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like, we probably shouldn't do that right now.
Isn't this, and due to the weight, isn't it in some weird farm vehicle tax loophole as well?
Well, there's also that. There's chicken tax shit where if you're a small business owner and you buy a vehicle that's probably bigger and heavier than you actually need, you actually can deduct more of it in taxes. Yeah. So, I'm dealing with that here at the shop because I'm going to have to buy a truck. I'm going to need to buy a shop truck and a regular old half ton pickup truck will satisfy every need I will have. Towing a single car trailer, shortest distances, picking up people from the airport, hauling some basic things around, like a regular old, even like the small engine, not even the big engine, but I can save money in my taxes by buying a heavy-duty truck, which is heavier and less efficient and more expensive and more wasteful, but there's tax benefits to it. So that
sucks. This guy, Isaiah, said he owned an 09 Dodge 3500, and he can't believe how big trucks are now. A 2018 F-150 is significantly bigger than my 3500.
It is.
I had an F-150 in it. It was a nice size.
Dude, those trucks I'm talking about from Gotham, they were 2006 and 2007 Ram 2500s and 3500s. Current gen half-ton trucks are way bigger than those trucks. Way fucking bigger. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
That's Eric has a Lightning. Eric's got an 03 Lightning.
Really?
That's like, yeah.
Oh, I
that's
check
like
that out.
Charmingly tiny.
Like, oh, as I say, it was not a dually, so I stand corrected, but still a 3500. Yeah.
I mean, still, yeah, no. I mean, if you, they're taller, they're fucking got these massive front ends. Like, the roof, the bed rails, and I have a photo on Instagram, the bed rails of the TRX were taller than the roof on the Mach-E.
They're taller than your wife.
Yeah. Like, yeah, like it's so massive.
I think it's all just part of the thing, like, we like more. And I don't know if it's humans or...
No, it's Americans.
I know it's definitely Americans. But
it's definitely Americans.
It's in every way.
Everybody. Everybody likes more.
Everybody likes more. Okay, so yeah. So everybody likes more. Everybody likes more space and more food and more money and more things and more things. And this is the vehicular example of that. But yeah. Like, our houses keep getting bigger, even though then we have to fill them with more shit. Just all that stuff.
That's you almost had a fucking Eddie Vedder lyric there. I'm blanking on the actual lyric, but it's the song Society from the End of the Wild soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
What is it? A million monkeys pounding away on a type?
Right. So that's that. Zach and I made a series with eBay Motors.
We did.
I've seen the trailer.
We went to Austin. The series is going to air December 13th. Second week? Is that the second week or the third week in December?
I think it's second week.
It's December 13th through 20th.
Nice.
It's four episodes.
Back to back to back.
It's every other day.
Oh.
It's every other day. It's like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Monday.
Correct? Nice.
Yeah. Do we talk about the premise? How much do we want to like
when
give away for
out?
That, Zach? How much do we want to talk about now?
When does this
let's
air?
Wait till. This won't air for a few weeks. Yeah, we can talk about it because then the trailer will be out by then.
Yeah. So where do we start? I guess the premise of the film?
Let's do the premise. We don't want to tell people the cars yet.
Right, although we did give away on my Instagram what the cars are.
Well, we don't
but
say
we didn't
what we did.
Say what we did to them.
Yeah.
The premise is that crossovers are making car culture more boring.
Correct.
More homogenous, and the enthusiast has fewer and fewer options to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
And so Zach and I thought that we could buy some used cars and turn them into better enthusiast-focused crossovers.
We can fix this problem.
We can fix the problem.
I believe you too.
Yes.
And so we bought some cars, and we sent them to Texas to be modified by the guys at Rally Ready Driving School, and Texas Dave, and then we did a series of challenges.
We did,
and they were fun.
It was different locations, bunch of different stuff.
Yeah,
it was really fun.
You have unlimited access to a racetrack and two different surfaces and cars you don't care about. It has to be fun.
It was very fun.
And it has to be fun.
It was very fun.
That's like, the dream. Yeah. Like, leave us alone, the Kimi Räikkönen, and leave me alone. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah,
and just
actually,
like, do what you know what to do.
It pretty much was like that. It was like eBay Motors, like, gave us a bunch of money and no oversight, really. I mean, seriously, there's
sounds like
very
the
little
U.S.
oversight.
Government.
Yeah,
and but unlike the U.S. government, we actually did what we were supposed to do with the money. We had Armin and Will Schultz shooting it, we got the fucking drone operator. We got was awesome.
Nice,
and the bits that we planned pretty much
worked
all
really
worked
well.
Out.
Yeah.
Some of them worked actually even better than we expected them to. And it's, you know, obviously, Zach and I grew up watching Top Gear, and so it's clearly influenced by Top Gear.
How can you not?
You can't do a cheap car challenge in 2021 and not have it be.
They're the Simpsons of cars.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, any idea we have, you're like, oh, fuck, they did that.
I mean, pretty much. It's not like.
Which is fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's fine.
It was great.
I found it to be incredibly
super fun.
Enjoyable.
People be entertained watching it.
Yeah.
You know?
And because we didn't have a time limit requirement. That's actually really important. Like a lot of other projects that you might see people doing out there
Got to hit that 12-minute mark.
It's got to be a certain number of minutes. Yeah. It's got to be a certain number of episodes. And so eBay didn't really give a shit. They said make it however long or short as it needs to be. And it wasn't like a cop-out. Like, it's like, it's not like, ooh, we only have to make 4 minutes. It's like, it's not like that. But, like, we didn't need to fluff or stretch or build, you know, build drama with extra minutes and minutes and minutes
like
of content.
No, like, when we planned it, you know, at first we were like, oh, this could be maybe 8 videos. And then as we, like, really wrote it out and started talking to, you know, editor and director and all that stuff, it went, I think this will flow really naturally as 4. And mm-hmm. that way we don't, like you said, we don't have to stretch it or shrink it or chop shit too short like you do for TV.
Yeah.
It's like, how will this story unfold the best for the viewer? And that ended up being 4. And it's going to be like really nice and meaty.
Yeah, you got to ask, like, is this moving the story forward at all?
Right.
If not, then you probably don't need it.
Right.
Well, we just string out 8 seasons of Game of Thrones type of stuff. Like, just get to the point. Like,
just get to winter.
My favorite quote recently from a pitch was like, we need to have snackable content.
Oh, God.
But, snackable, you know, it needs to be as long as it needs to be. Like 4 minutes, 8 minutes, 6 minutes, whatever.
Yeah.
Just make it the right length.
Clearly, like, platforms that need snackable content, and people have a short attention span, or whatever. But I think what's cool on YouTube, and that we and other people in this space have proven, like, you can just make it as long or short as you want. If it's good, people watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
who cares?
So it's really fun. We just saw the first trailer, cut of the first trailer. I think that once you guys see the trailer, you're going to go, oh, that's something I want to watch.
It is.
The first trailer is very much a good overview of kind of what we're doing.
Yeah, it is.
Exactly what that's supposed to do.
Well, the very obvious.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like Will is good at cutting trailers, and when the editor is excited about the project, that is very, very helpful.
Always better.
He's very enthusiastic.
And you have no client to lean over your shoulder.
Not really, no.
That's the best thing.
Yeah. So it's going to be really funny. It's going to be the December 12th, 13th, 15th, 17th, and 20th. Those are the 4 episodes.
Yeah.
And I think, are we going to put the movies on YouTube to promote it? The first 2 movies?
I bet a lot of people haven't even know they exist or seen them.
Yeah, it's branded All Cars Go to Heaven, and so we're going to put the first 2 movies on our YouTube channel for free with the trailer in front of them so
nice.
People can kind of get in the vibe of what we're doing.
The backstory.
I think it's been long enough. We can probably put those on YouTube. It's okay.
Yeah, the trilogy. The people we told we would never put it up for free probably have forgotten they even have access.
Yeah.
Literally 2012.
Yeah, yeah. If you gave us $6 in 2013 and then we put the video on YouTube in 2021, I don't think you've been ripped off.
Yeah,
I think
in the decade, you're all right.
I think it's probably fine. Yeah. But it's exciting to make, produced, planned content where we actually, you know, write out stories and
loved
jokes
it.
And bits. And Zach did an excellent job as producer. We almost got screwed a couple times in the pre-production, but it ended up working out just fine. Nice. And we bought some awesome cars on eBay Motors, and we modified them in a very, very fun way. And you can go visit those cars. If you're in Austin, you can go visit those cars, because when we were done with them, we sold them to Rally Ready. they were we did that because they expressed interest. They were like, we want these cars,
just
actually.
And we got rid of a bit because they said that. We were like, oh, we're going to do something, and it would have just
rollover challenge?
No, I would have died if we did that.
We had an opportunity to absolutely destroy the cars if we wanted to, and we didn't.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not to say we didn't break things, but we would have, like, we were going to do the bit where you actually fill them with water.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, to see if they're watertight from the inside.
Which I would have won, by the way, because I washed both the cars after you left because they looked the way they looked. And I wanted to, and Rob was like, thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
And when I washed my car, the inside stayed dry.
Yeah. Mine, not so much. Which is weird, because I bought it in L.A., it was raining out. It was the one day, it was the huge torrential downpour, and I bought it in the rain. And when the dude brought it over here, I did my normal, does he, you know, do you go, do you want to test drive it? I go, no, no, you live in Long Beach, you drive it here, and if it makes it here, that's sufficient. And he, and when it got here, it was dry on the inside. I wonder if he stopped around the corner to dry it off on the inside.
Maybe it's just raining in the right angle.
Yeah.
And when I washed it with a pressure washer, I hit it from all angles. I don't know.
And it got very wet on the inside, didn't it?
Yeah, it misted.
Yeah, yeah. I washed it at one point during the shoot with a high volume hose, and there was a shocking amount of water. I was like, "Where did this even come from?" It was fucking crazy. I washed it for a reason that you'll see. That's very obvious in the film. Where it's like, "Oh God, that's disgusting." Actually, so that's coming.
What did you say, Thad?
You stuck around to do rally school after, didn't you?
Yeah, I did the 2-day school. It was so great, fun. Super Subarus? Educational.
Where are you driving?
We started in Civic SIs for the.
Okay. Strange.
Well, I did the program like the entry program because I've never done a real formal driving school. I've always done these weird like, oh, we get 2 hours at the firm.
Yeah.
Or we get 2 hours of like, I'm going to do drift school, whatever. But I wanted to just be a student, not like I didn't have a camera. I didn't want to do any special program. So
yeah, filming a school is
so challenging.
It's terrible.
And the videos are great.
People have invited us to do those kinds of things before, and it's not like we don't appreciate the invite and we understand why somebody would offer free school for filming. But you're not. It's like the worst of both worlds. You're not going to have a good video, and you're not going to have a good school experience.
Right, because you're not focused on either one, and your time is stretched super thin. So they put us in the Civics first because most people there haven't experienced left foot braking.
Okay.
Like, I do it all the time for camera car driving, but everyone there was like, oh, this feels very strange. Mm-hmm. So you start in there and you do these figure eights. And once...
With manual brakes.
All the cars have manual brakes.
No boosted.
Left foot braking is so much easier when you have manual brakes.
It feels much nicer.
I mean, I'm very used to it where my right foot's worse at braking than my left foot, but I can understand why switching to left foot braking is hard because your brain isn't wired that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the pedal, when you have a very sensitive power brake, you're not used to the tiny light touch on the pedal.
True.
You know what I mean? And when you get into the rally cars that have manual brakes, you physically press the pedal harder. It's more like what you expect from your left foot.
It's a rewarding driving experience.
Oh, it's super rewarding. Yeah. But like, it just, if you were to try left foot braking from the first time with power brakes versus manual brakes, you're going to be real jerky.
Especially on dirt. You do a lot of bouncing around while braking in a corner in the rally driving.
Yeah.
So they just want to get people to get used to that. But after that, they put you in WRXs, like modified rally suspension. One had a welded diff. One had an aftermarket steering wheel, so the rack felt a little bit quicker. There were three of them, and they all felt very slightly different. But whatever. I mean, they're awesome. They're fucking...
DCCD or just like regular WRXs?
No, just regular WRXs, not STIs.
Okay, nice.
Which you don't need really the adjustable differential and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And they put you through, I don't know, just their plan, which is you do these figure eights where you're learning to left foot brake and how to tuck the nose or, tighten your circle or expand your circle just using the brake. Like, you keep the throttle, same position, keep the wheel at the same position, but just adding and taking away brake.
Nice.
And then you go to slalom, and then after that they do dynamic slalom where they change where the cones are like every two laps. So one's a tight apex, tight radius, one's a wider apex, one's a double apex. And then by the end of it, we were doing the same course that you and I did at the end of our film. And I mean, you're doing turns and there's yumps involved and like there's all this stuff, and you have to learn Scandi flick and pendulum turns and all that shit. And like, I thought I knew those things, but there were a lot of skills that are just a little bit different to where you can fuck you up. Like, I'm used to counter steering when you go into a slide from drifting.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, we were not supposed to do that. You just keep the wheel turning.
In an all-wheel drive car. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You just let it do its thing and you just use the brake to turn in and
then power.
I had to turn that off. Yeah, that was really hard to undo that wiring. But man, like, it is the most fun.
It feels abusive driving, like,
holy
rally
shit,
style. Like,
yeah,
we're keeping
it
flat here and we're only using the brakes. Like,
yeah.
This is not correct.
I kept thinking, are you sure? Like, we're going in this big right-hand sweeper at 40. And he's like, yeah, keep it floored. And the car's just bouncing. And there's all kinds of noise happening. And we're, throwing dust. And my brain's like, really? We're going to go faster than this? And then we did this big stage at the end, we did a different section. Like a, they have like a, they have so much space there. And this one had more speed, softer dirt, two yumps in it. And I mean, it was exciting. It felt like a real stage doing like, I don't know, four, up to 50.
Was that the stage out by the horse pastures?
Yes. Yeah. It was exactly through there. Yeah. So it had these cool camber turns and we did the big berm, which feels nuts. Like you get into it and you know, it's like one of those motorcycles that rides the wooden
barrel
thing. Yeah. It's a full carousel.
Like at the ring.
Super cool.
Yeah. Pretty, exactly.
But real steep. Yeah. I can't recommend rally school enough.
That's the best.
And if you want to, you know, it's, I think it's the rally schools, and I haven't done rally ready. I did dirt fish. But the skills you get at those schools transfer better to your all the time driving,
totally agree.
Even than like a traditional racing school. Because like a traditional racing school, you're not really supposed to be going near the edge of grip. You're not. You know, you're learning how to best drive whatever racetrack you're learning on, and you're learning some racecraft. But like, that's sort of playing with the weight transfer and seeing how your inputs affect the balance of the car. Like those skills translate to everything.
Yeah, and most people these days drive a front wheel drive or front wheel drive bias car.
Yeah.
So I think learning to drive these, you know, Civic SIs in the dirt, that's going to most closely replicate if you're driving and you suddenly find ice on your commute
or snow, or
it's really wet or some kind of strange, dangerous, compromising position. Like you should know what the car is going to do and what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's cool. Rally ready.
I'm going to go back.
Yeah.
Do advanced school.
I want to do the one in Wales. It's cheap.
Ooh, Wales. That sounds fun.
That does sound
you're going to be over there.
In theory, according to the Lotus people, I will be
so just on the other side.
The spring. Yeah. Yeah, it's only like a different country.
No, that's kind of the same thing. They like to call themselves a different country, but
the language says it's a different country.
We know. all the consonants. No, I know the Welsh people are very proud about their Wales heritage thing.
Yeah.
But they in the coronavirus
I bet they are. They got taken over by the Brits,
They would stop the during the coronavirus, they had people on the border to stop the English coming in, but they're
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wild.
All right, so someone can tell the difference.
Basically. Someone can tell the difference, but they're the same.
Cool. Do we have a bunch of questions from people?
Yeah,
all right,
do.
Let's get to some of those.
I'm just refreshing to check, but we'll go to the top here.
Oh, there's a bunch. Okay.
Are there any new ones? No. Okay.
Let's see. Gunner Ray says, this should be incredibly obvious.
Square peg, round hole.
Yeah, why have Porsche or an independent shop never put a 911 turbo engine in a Macan? Well, a flat six engine is completely different shaped from a V6 engine.
Yes.
And it will not come close to fitting in the front of a
Macan.
Like
front wheels.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose if you removed a lot of the Macan... you could
and then
maybe,
the transaxle
no,
and like it's
I mean then your steering angle I think you'd lose
what I'm saying maybe
angle,
if
yeah.
you took out like all of the trunk of a Macan you could find a way to put one in the back
oh like
but
a
I don't,
mid-engine Macan
yeah
like
but
a
like
Clio
I don't,
V6
like, yeah like one of those group B cars or something yeah. but like I don't see how
I don't,
that is
what, there's no real point
there's no real point
they,
no.
they have a twin turbo six yeah it's a different shape but like they make plenty of power. I don't know.
Yeah, the
Macan. It'd be such a weird thing to do.
Have you ever seen a 911 turbo engine on a stand outside of a 911? You're like, that's not going to go in the front. Where is it going to go?
It's
like, that doesn't fit.
It's very wide.
Yeah. It doesn't
what
fit.
What are tuned Macans making anyway?
I mean,
a lot, probably.
400 and something horsepower.
Plenty.
Yeah. Let's see. Dante says, say you win a conversion van in a hand of poker. Oh, you win a conversion van builder.
Do you
like
win
a business.
A human?
Like you win, yeah, you win a business.
I'd like to think you win a human.
Would you stick with building Midwest MyBox or pivot to a different
anymore.
Car niche involving modifying new cars or trucks? Well, if I want a conversion van builder, I wouldn't start building something else.
I do love the phrase Midwest
it's
Maybach.
Not like I'd be like, oh, you build Ariel Adams now. Like, what? No, like, that's not how that works.
I really like the cabinets you put in that Sprinter, but I'm thinking something with a motorcycle engine, rear-wheel drive now. We're going to get
all carbon fiber.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, no, I'm... No, I... Yeah, I would... I would leave them. I'd leave them be and collect a paycheck.
Did that guy coin Midwest Maybach, or
someone
has used
so.
That before?
I mean, I haven't, but I'm sure it's very from somewhere. Funny. We've used I've used redneck Rolls Royce before.
Yeah, TRX.
Josh says, Matt is nicely candid about being able or unable to afford certain things. Do you have any guidelines to help you decide whether you can afford a particular luxury item? I make more money than I spend.
Yeah. Do you have it in the account or not?
Well, I make more money than I spend, and I also try not to buy too many things that I think will decrease in value.
Well, you're also pretty good at delayed gratification on certain things. Like, I can wait a year to buy X or...
Well, I have a lot of shit, so yeah. I don't need anything right now. But the things I do buy, at least the expensive things, I try to have some kind of research and knowledge about what they are, what they're worth. I mean,
there's... I guess smart purchases. You're not buying 100... shitty watches, you buy a couple.
Well, yeah, like yeah. I could afford I can afford a $15,000 watch if at the other end of it I get, you know, not guaranteed, but yeah. like it's a tolerance for risk, right? Like yeah. if I buy a car and I believe that that car is on the upside of collectability and I can afford it and I can get roughly you know, what yeah. I had into it or maybe a little more, or the downside is not that big. Like we're talking to my friend Pete Brotman, who is and Sirio, these guys. You know, if you want to buy a car and the upside is that you think this car is on its way up as a collectible, and what's the downside? Well, maybe you lose 10 or 15% if you hate it. You know, if you hate it, you want out of it. But the market says if you cut the price by 10%, you're fine. So your risk is low. Yeah. Your reward is possibly high. And in the meantime, you've got a car that you think you like. Same thing for watches or a house or anything really expensive. I also have like traditional like investments, like long, like mutual funds and shit like that. Yeah. And I have like people where I just give them my extra money. And I go, here, just put this in the right place.
Yeah,
and so I do that, and I try to stay ahead of the IRS. Not like in a bad. I just mean like I pay my fucking taxes. I'm not trying to.
Yeah, you got to pay the taxes.
You do that math. But like, no, I mean my wife and I do well. We don't have kids, so we don't need to save up for some college fund or any of that kind of stuff. And
cats aren't speaking English anytime soon.
Yeah. Make more than you spend and try not to buy things that will decrease in value with any kind of regularity. Yeah,
buy like one nice thing once, yeah. not a bunch of shitty things
right.
that are close.
Anonymity, any chance of profiting from importing Dubizzle cars to the USA?
No.
Why not?
They have figured out the pricing of things as well. A lot of the stuff are European or different. Manufacturer regions.
Yeah.
Like we have a GCC region now. So if you're getting a USA car there, it's most likely some strange title thing through Florida and kicked to shit. They've figured out the math on yeah. stuff. So unless you want like a 1994 Nissan Patrol, then like you can't get them here, but yeah. they're pretty cheap there, or like an old Land Cruiser, but not.
And typically the math is not worthwhile.
No.
They don't have the best quality cars over there. I mean,
it's a
used
very
cars.
Rough environment on cars.
Yeah.
It's really hot. You know,
sandy.
Sandy. Yeah. It cooks things. Like the most recent thing to fail is like in my little gear selector, like, you know, the plastic that keeps stuff out, like just disintegrated.
Really?
Whoa. Yeah. Like, how does this happen? But
120 degrees every
yeah,
day.
It roasts things. Yeah. So
yeah,
I sent you the poor 575. It was like
such a bummer.
Just sitting outside, roasting away. The dash is pulling back. It's got a shitty body kit. Like just unloved. So there's a lot of.
We should bring that back and then just rip the dash out and make it like some kind of streety race cars thing.
Yeah, but I think the problem is a lot of people there just like abandon stuff when it's not as cool anymore, and then you get all these. Poor maintenance things, and you know
Wait,
how it
so
is.
That Ferrari's free?
No, I think
no. They just
someone,
they just like they just like old. They don't like literally abandon it. They just like stop doing maintenance and fucking dump it for cheap.
They live in the airport parking lot.
Yeah, there's a on my way home. There's like a Maserati like literally rotting in a parking lot at this person's business I own. I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's his.
Yeah.
It's just sitting there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just like it's on all flat tires. The roof is starting to cave in a little bit. I'm like, this could be like it's not $0 anymore, but whatever.
Yeah. It's not. We've looked into that a couple times, and it doesn't. The math doesn't really work.
Going that way, maybe, like exporting to Dubai, because
they don't give a shit about Carfax. Yeah.
really, like if you have something interesting and cool, yeah, for sure. But
yeah,
not too much.
Austin Modelski, what is the best modern Mustang if the goal is to modify it? You said your Fox is good, but needed power. I like the Coyote motor, but I don't know if the 2013 and up steering and everything else was good. Do you just pick the body style you like, or is there a best one?
Did you drive Mustang, the silver one?
Yeah. I mean, I think the best value is probably like a 14 because they're fucking cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And the Maximum Motorsports stuff can dial out a lot of the solid axle behavior. I mean,
the steering on that one we drove felt great.
Yeah.
The Maximum Motorsports car. Yeah.
Excellent. What's the bar called where they.
Bannered bar?
Yeah, it's like,
like the one that goes down the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Corvettes, like the newest, nicest one you can afford, really. It's not like they've gotten worse as they've gotten newer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, true. Do you want IRS or not IRS? I mean, that's what I would say. Like, I really like that Musto's generation. I think it's small, especially compared to the new ones.
Oh, yeah.
It looks small.
Musto's was awesome. We had 305s all around.
Very
it
fast.
Ripped.
Yeah. With,
yeah.
A stock engine, too.
But like, if you did all those modifications to a 2015, it wouldn't be worse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
True. Yeah.
Like, it was good because it had a nice balanced set of suspension, wheel, and tire modifications without doing too much to the motor. That's the key. Like, what I wouldn't do is put a big blower on a GT.
No.
Because I don't know if the
GT 500 that does.
Well, everyone I've ever driven, a GT based car with a supercharger, has never ever felt like it made the horsepower that they said it did.
Hmm.
That bolt on blower that makes like 700 horsepower, there's no fucking way that power gets to the wheels properly.
It's a Whipple.
It's any of them, the Roush blower or whatever. Like, so, I mean, my opinion is just the nicest, newest one you can afford because they haven't gotten worse.
Yeah.
The best value is probably a 2014 GT.
What about like a Laguna Seca Boss? Then you have investment-y kind of?
Well, if you're modifying it, there's no investment. Yeah. You're modifying it means no investment. Unfortunately, it means you're burning money. I think Fox bodies are cool, but if you don't have an emotional attachment to them, don't bother. Terminators are pretty cool in terms of like the power you can make with them, but like the driving position is awful and they're built like shit. So there isn't a best one. You just have to decide like, are you emotionally attached to one body style or not? Like for the car from your youth or whatever. And what is your budget and how important is independent rear suspension? So that's pretty much like, if you're not on bumpy roads, then the independent suspension is less important. Follow up. Is a built Mustang track car a good or better experience than a factory 5 Cobra if the goal is time attack and autocross as an experience not to win? Well, first off, if you crash a factory 5 Cobra on the track, you die.
Yeah.
You're maimed.
Dead.
So, in my opinion, cars that are being driven on track, you want to have like actual body work and a roof and doors.
Well,
maybe airbags, if not harnesses.
I would way rather have
a B pillar.
Like Musto's Mustang over Cobras are exciting, but if I'm really doing time attack and autocross and driving there and shit, like.
Well, you know, is he going every weekend all the time where he wants to do this once in a blue moon? Because if you start lapping a Factory 5 Cobra, well, they have the Challenge Cobra with the cages and all that shit.
I mean, if you're going to be on a racetrack.
I want steel.
Safety. Safety matters. And you know, it's not the kind of thing you think about until you have a bad fucking crash.
Just watch the video. There's a guy that flipped his Cobra replica at Willow Springs.
Yeah.
And I watched that and I was like, I don't think I'll ever track our Cobra.
Yeah,
and
you're
that was it.
Fucked.
Yeah.
And you have to, if you want to be safe, you have to put the big hoop on, which looks dumb.
Yeah.
And it just compromises it.
You got to have built the arm Mustang's straps, because if you roll over, your arm's going all over the place.
A built Mustang will be plenty exciting.
Yeah.
It's more than enough.
But by built, it really means suspension.
Yep.
You don't really need to do anything with the engine.
400 horsepower, you strip all the shit out since it's a track car.
Yeah, it's a great engine, too.
Good tires.
Andrew says, do you think since there's no incentive to buy the, quote, fast EV, that they will slow down the regular ones soon, so you have to buy the fast one to get current levels of acceleration?
Mm.
Not really. I mean,
I don't think you can unring that bell.
Correct.
I'm with you. I think the bell has been rung on that.
If they did it differently and like kept something in reserve for a while and have gentleman's Japanese agreement, then you could like increment. But I think they're all going to be fast.
I mean, there may be an incentive to use smaller motors in order to build like a 400 mile EV if they really did a range focused one. But not well. It's my opinion that there's no incentive to buy the fast EV. That doesn't mean that people aren't buying the fast EVs. My opinion and the market are not the same thing. Yep. If you look out, if you go drive around Los Angeles, and granted, and I know Los Angeles isn't everywhere, but it's a leader in EV market. There are plenty of big battery performance oriented EVs. There's lots of Taycan turbos. There's lots of Tesla Plaids. There's lots of performance EVs. The automakers are clearly seeing a market, and I don't like he said. I don't think you can unring that bell. I think even I mean, you can buy like regular, like you can buy like a base Mach-E. You can buy like the Kia. What do you call it? What's the thing you drove? The Soul EV or
the VW. I drove the ID4.
The ID4, like that's not that fast. Don't they have like a pretty basic one?
It's way slower than the basic one, which I drove only one motor, is very slow.
Yeah,
yeah.
You can buy like I don't see Porsche coming out with a slow one.
Well, it's like any car. Like there's AMG, and then there's just regular CLA. Like,
yeah.
There's always gonna be a spread of power. Well, maybe not powertrains anymore, but performance levels based on either what they want to sell, what the price point's going to be. And I think you make a good point about the intent. It's like there's a 2-liter engine. They're going to make the 2-liter engine version of an EV where it maybe gets 500 miles because it's a smaller motor and it uses less power. And they slow down that power, that literal electrical power delivery. And then you can get the fast one if you want to have the fast one and tell people you have the fast one.
And I don't know exactly, but I'm not sure, like, in terms of the cost of building, like, if they have a slower one, it would be to make it cheaper, right? Or make the range longer. But what is the incremental cost savings of using a smaller motor versus, I know there's cost savings in doing one motor versus two.
Of course. Yeah.
But what is the cost savings of doing a slightly smaller rear motor or front motor than you know
that,
what I mean?
Does that mean you need two production lines or two suppliers or not?
Yeah.
Well, I think, they'll get better at building motors, so all of that will just kind of raise the tide as well. So like the small motor will also be more efficient and more powerful as it goes. So I think they're all just going to go
probably
like until they, like what it was Johnny was saying, the Lucid has a motor that like fits in a carry-on bag or something. Like,
well, they did a cool thing. They shrunk all their parts to try to make the interior space more roomy. And I think I like what they did with their packaging. They just did a really creative thing with like, well, why don't we put the motors over here instead of here?
We will be driving the Lucid Air Dream the fast one. Sweet. On December 8th.
Sweet.
I literally just got the text about it during this show.
Nice.
Yeah. We only get a few hours with it. We don't get to like take it home for a week, but we will be having a video with
it
in December.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Nice.
Tyler M., what gear is in the One Take Pelican case these days? Particularly interested in what mounts you use. We use
Manfrotto.
We use the Film Tools 4 and 6 inch vacuum cups, which have the little pumpers and are very durable, and they last a really long time. And you can replace the parts on them if the pump gets bad. The pump's like $5. We then have a Manfrotto 3-axis arm and some Manfrotto ball heads. We then have some clamps. Fucking, I have the case.
It's right outside the door.
I'll just get it.
Do a little show and tell for everybody. What did you bring to school, Matt?
This is how the sauce is made, or the sausage is made.
Here's my case. There are many like it, but this one is mine.
As you learned at the airport when the guy took it.
Okay. So, we have some mounts. Here's my three suction cups, and then I have three. We've got, this is a 4-inch vacuum cup with a Manfrotto ball head, the 6-inch vacuum cup with a Manfrotto ball head, and then this is a 3-axis Manfrotto adjustable on a 4-inch cup. So two for in-car cameras, and then the bigger one is for the audio, so it rattles less. And then I have three of these, which are called Cardellini clamps, which also have a mini Manfrotto ball head on them. We got three of those so I can clamp the GoPro cameras to signs and K-rails to do drive-bys. I then have a Zoom H5 sound recorder.
Oh, that's tiny.
That's a good one.
That's smaller.
Yep.
Great. Yeah, they're really nice.
Three GoPro Hero 8 Blacks, which can mount to either the cups or the
or the clamps. And then I have a DJI mini gimbal, this little guy, to do some details. That goes in there. And then I have a Canon SX720 point and shoot camera, which I use to take the still photos of the car. And then I've got some extra batteries and some gaffer tape and a couple different charging cables that come with me, and some lens cleaner. And I don't always use it, but I've got the Sennheiser digital wireless lav. So that's what lives in the case. That is all of it. And all of it fits in. Hold on. Pelican is a Pelican 1510 case. And when it's completely full, it weighs 29 pounds. Oh, this goes in there. Yeah, 29 pounds. So that's everything in the Pelican.
That's about.
And Zach's is basically the same. Adidas, has the EV craze caught on in Dubai? Do they have any favorite EVs?
I see a lot of Teslas. And I'm starting to see more Taycans around, but not yet. It's getting there. I was recently.
But gas is $1 a gallon.
Yeah, what's the point? There's a couple charging stations here and there, but like, what's
are
the
there
big
not
one?
Big solar farms out in the desert yet? I mean, there's a lot of sun there.
There's one giant solar farm, but I'm not sure like what they're doing with that. Yeah. They should. They should have a lot. They should. It's windy there often as well. Like, put the things up. But yeah, not really.
Not really.
I got passed on the shoulder by a Tesla Model 3 very quickly recently, though. Like on the far shoulder. Like, where the fuck are you going?
Yeah.
But not so much.
John Fisher. Enjoyed my reminiscing about my days as a smoker. Wondering if I smoked in my car. Yup.
Yep.
Yeah, I did. And it was one of my favorite activities.
It's fun to smoke in a car.
Oh, God, did I enjoy it. You'd have one when you got in the car, you left. You'd have another. Yeah. Right before you got there, one or two in the middle. God damn, did I love smoking in my car. It was one of my favorite activities. I even at one point had when I was living in New York, I had the rain guards put on like the Japanese people did, so you could crack the window, still flick the cigarette even when it was raining. That was very important.
On road trips, when I'd fall asleep, I knew we were arriving home because I'd hear the cigarette light. I was like, oh, it's the one before we get here.
Yep.
Get there.
Yep. Yeah. I feel bad I used to smoke in the car with other people now, but like that was what I did.
Made it this far.
Smokers can be selfish like that.
Now my old boss used to smoke in his house, which I always thought was strange.
No,
you always went outside.
In New York, when I lived in New York City, I would smoke in my apartment. And when I lived in Greenwich, Connecticut, in a little townhouse, I would smoke indoors. But when I got to California, and because it was fucking cold or raining or whatever, when I got to California, I was at least courteous enough to go outside.
That's because the house would have stunk. Like
no, it was terrible.
Horribly.
Yeah, that's the worst. There's no reason not to go outside. But yeah, I did. I smoked in my car, and I enjoyed the fuck out of it. Frankly, Prashan, what?
Well, this I don't know if Thad knows about this one, but Prashant says my gay Persian friend keeps hooking up with Arab dads on the DL. What's gay culture like in the UAE?
Banned.
Oh.
Well, there was
that would explain the DL portion of it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the big uproar I saw recently was the British embassy put up a rainbow flag for Pride or whatever.
Oh, I remember that news story made it here.
And then the comments underneath the What's on Dubai post was very, very interesting.
I bet.
It aligns with some other people in America on the same values, but that sometimes they hate each other.
Shocking.
Yeah, so that's not the place to go if you want to go do that.
I don't know.
Or Saudi, or Bahrain, or Qatar, or any of those places.
Yeah, it's probably not ideal. Yeah,
like, you can be a gay person and be there. I just wouldn't take a random person home. The CID there is...
Oh, is there like... Might they cut off your dick or something?
No, like recently they busted like all of the coke dealers at once.
Whoa.
They had like these UK undercover ladies to sit at the bar. So they would bring in outside talent, like outside police, to like say, hey, do you know where you're going to get this? And then one night... they like busted 30 coke dealers all at one time. So they got everything.
Like every coke dealer in the city.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
They do that with like the prostitution occasionally. Uh-huh. And like it's weird. They know what's going on. Like
well, when there's cameras everywhere, you can't hide.
You're literally tracked. You can be tracked the moment you get off the plane pulling into the grocery store, there's cameras in and out with that. At night, the flash comes on to make sure they see your license plate.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's real surveillance.
I haven't locked my doors in 4 years, though. And, like, I leave the car unlocked. So it's a trade-off.
Yeah, right. So the trade-off is there's basically no such thing as what you'd call petty crime.
Yeah, non-existent.
Because people just know they're not going to get away with it.
Yeah, I can leave the camera on a tripod for a time lapse and then come back to it after eating lunch, and it's still there.
Is the trade-off worth it, you think?
It's nice not to have to worry about those things.
But, like, do you feel like you're not free?
No.
Yeah.
Like, here, we're also can be tracked in various ways, but... You know, they don't talk about it as much, depending on how much.
That's partially true. But you told me about the thing, the story you told me the other day, and I don't know if it's 100% true or not, but about this person who left an expensive piece of jewelry in the back of a cab, and because this cab could be followed for the whole rest of its day, they were able to get this piece of jewelry back in like 6 hours. So I suppose actual effective policing, where the goal is to return the lost item, versus what we have here, where you know the cops come and
this person's dead.
The cops, they come, you know, a half hour, 45 minutes later, and they solve a very low percentage of actual crime, and they don't use as much of this technology, but Americans don't necessarily want to feel like they're surveilled,
but. Kind of are.
I mean, in some ways you are.
There's always degrees to things, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's like, yes, we live in a very strange surveillance state, but it's not as extreme.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's way more extreme over there. Yeah. I mean, there's like millions and millions of cameras in this one city, and the job of those cameras is to follow people around.
Yeah. You know, like we have, like you remember the Mossad coming in, like whacking those guys in the hotel.
Yeah.
And, like, we have the Afghani dictator, not the dictator, the Afghani president landed in Dubai after all the Afghanistan stuff.
Uh-huh.
With, you know, there's a lot of interesting people that are there. I think the surveillance helps to.
I mean, I guess if you're not an actual criminal, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter.
I'm not an African warlord.
Yeah.
I'm okay. I'm fine.
Yeah.
But. You know, it's like.
I feel like we're surveilled through our phones. I mean, I feel 100%. Like we may not have cameras on every street corner, but like.
Well, they have facial recognition cameras in more airports now and other public places that have gotten really, really good.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, we definitely are surveilled in some way, but I feel like we've traded our freedom away for convenience, as opposed to it being forced on us by governments. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's fair. Yeah.
Like we signed the terms of service. Like we've sold out, you know, for convenience. It's not, we live in a oppressive, and we do live in an oppressive state in some ways, but it's not, it's not the same as those types of things where there's this sort of overarching presence of surveillance. It's much more subtle.
Well, I guess it's like, are the cameras, is the intent behind all that there for penalization of like, we're watching everybody, we're going to catch you doing things?
There's so many drunk drivers, if they wanted to apply themselves, like he left the Ritz-Carlton at 2:30 in the morning. Let's see what happens. You can watch him come out of this way, get into his G-Wagon, drive down the street. Like, you have the credit card bill from the place. They could just, but they have to keep it acceptable for people. Like, they should.
Right.
They should crack down on drunk driving. It's pretty bad.
It's funny that in a place with that many cameras and in theory where there shouldn't be as much drinking.
But the flip side, since you don't get pulled over ever, like if you're a drunk driver and you can stay between the lines for your distance home, you can be fine.
If you're if you get into a crash drunk, they take your life.
You're fucked, right? You're leaving the country. You're
really
going to sit in jail for a while, then get deported.
Oh, see, I'm okay with that. I'm okay. Yeah, I'm okay with like not having third and fourth chances for people who are drunk drivers. I'm okay with that.
They don't fuck around with that. Like if you do something that's clearly egregious, like you're going. Like,
yeah, wild stuff.
Yeah.
But, well, that's our show for today. Let's end on that.
Yeah.
That's only a little bit depressing.
When I got hit by my drunk driver, he was like four other DUIs.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like T-bone, middle of the day on Christmas, I think.
When was that?
When I was living in Florida.
Oh.
I had my mom's Ford Focus. And it was literally the middle of the day on Christmas. We're like, okay, we're leaving the house. So I leave first.
This dude started drinking like 7 a.m.
He was leaving the Walmart parking lot with the bar in it and full on T-boned me.
There's a bar in Walmart?
Rewind.
Yeah.
What? There's a bar in at Walmart?
Well, like in the same plaza.
Oh, okay.
Like
okay.
One of those strip things.
Okay.
You know, I was going to judge, but I realized there's bars in Whole Foods.
So I mean, there are bars in Whole Foods.
Yeah, we can go wine tasting at 10 a.m.
True.
Is it open again, the bar in the Venice Whole Foods?
I don't know.
I think they closed it for COVID. I don't know if they've reopened it yet. I mean, I imagine it probably is at this point, right? Whatever.
I don't know. Freedom.
I'd rather go drink anywhere else.
Oh, yeah. 100%. But I was always impressed at the number of people that I saw there.
Yeah. Benefit, you have access to any snack you could want.
That's a good point. That fucking, how about that grocery store in Austin? The Heb? Was it H-E-B or
H-E-B.
Heb?
I know, right?
Right.
That's where my head went when they texted it to me. That was like a Whole Foods plus a barbecue joint plus a Target. It was actually one of the best grocery stores I think I've ever been to.
Yeah.
It was enormous. And they had a sushi bar. They had more options for brisket than I have ever seen in my life.
This is what I'm missing.
Yeah. I was like, because even here, you won't always find a brisket in a grocery store by default. You know what I mean? Like sometimes it's like seasonal or whatever. But I was like, oh man, are we going to find a brisket in Texas? And they were like, oh child. Oh child. The brisket aisle is over there. Do you want a 20 pounder or like?
I have to go to a specialty place and explain this. I'm like, I need a brisket. It just isn't. There's like two people that are doing like barbecue in the region. Everyone's like, oh my God, this is amazing.
See, that's it's the like, one. You should
open a barbecue place or something there, man.
If you just literally copied Roy Choi, like if you opened a Korean barbecue place, you just reverse engineer Kogi, or you reverse engineer Egg Slut, or you reverse engineer any of these like easy but very successful trends over there, you could just print fucking money.
Yeah, this is where we need Carl. That would have been perfect.
I'd prefer you just move back here than fucking became an entrepreneur over there. I'm not interested in that.
Nah.
But if somebody wanted to leave America and really make a lot of money, just pick the five best like quick food LA options and take them over there.
What's the current trend here? Like, what's the new?
Is there anything like new? Because
it's been burgers for a while.
Kogi, you know, the Korean burrito is still the king of LA, I think. Nothing like super new.
There's no new trend. Everything's just new American cuisine, and it's all, you know, Brussels sprouts and savory stuff, like, and it's delicious.
Actual fresh ingredients.
Everything has become Earth Cafe.
Really?
Basically. Ugh. Yeah.
That would be the trend. More and more salad places that do make delicious, fancy salads.
Yeah, there's not enough of that over there either. But going the other way, I get this, you know, Indian, like the paratha bread.
Yeah, yeah.
They make like a paratha wrap with like the good spicy rice and then chicken tikka on the inside. So it's like an Indian burrito.
Yeah, we were talking about when we were in New Zealand, talking about butter chicken burritos. Yeah. I thought a butter chicken burrito would be excellent.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
Sarah got one by accident once at a place she can't remember. She said it was amazing.
Yeah, I love Indian food.
Indian burrito.
I think there's more better gyros happening now here too.
Yeah?
I mean, it's not like a gyro is anything new, but like the recent availability of gyros
meat
has gone
on
up.
A spit.
Yeah.
Just go to Zanku Chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, full stop.
Zanku.
That's it.
Forgot about Zanku.
Yeah, yeah. We should do that one while you're here.
Let's go Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Doesn't he leave on Friday?
No, he leaves Saturday.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, you get that garlic sauce going before you get on a plane.
Oh, BB.
Perfect.
Of course. Sweat it out.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah, some of the mask breath is a real thing.
Yeah. All right, that's our show. I got to eat something. I haven't eaten anything
yet
today. Huh?
You going to go eat?
We should go eat, yeah. Thaddeus is going back to Dubizzle, but we hope he returns soon. And we have a pro driver show on Sunday, which won't matter to anyone but the live people right now.
Who's the driver?
No, the pro driver is the top level of the Patreon. We do one extra show per month for the people who are the top tier supporters. Okay.
How many people do you have now?
It's like 600.
Nice.
So for $3 a month, you get access to the live stream. For $8 a month, you get access to the live stream. Plus, you don't have to listen to ads ever on either version of the show. Ad-free experience. And then for $10 a month, you get early access to all the episodes, ad-free, live stream, and a ninth show.
Nice.
So that's good.
$10 is not bad.
Yeah.
Was that two coffees, basically?
Mm-hmm. People have not been complaining about it. People who are into it and the people who don't want to do any of that stuff have the same podcast they've always had.
I think I'm blocked by Patreon.
What? Oh, because of Dubai?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's okay. You don't need to pay for anything. We gave you the password just for the back end deal. All right. Goodbye, everybody. Have a